Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here by myself today. Unfortunately, Devin is not able to join us, but I'm going to start us off with a quote, and then I'll tell you about that a little bit. All right. Carefulness costs you nothing. Carelessness may cost you your life. I talk about that specifically. I found that quote and I was kind of looking through some different quotes about safety, because I had a little incident where I hurt myself recently over spring break. So this past week before Easter, I spent the week up in Vermont with my in-laws and had a great time. So my wife and daughter went up to Vermont. We stayed with my in-laws for the week. And then and came back on Sunday, an actual Easter Sunday. Now, what we usually do is we'll go up, have our Easter on Easter Saturday, or we'll have it on the Saturday before with her family and, you know, extended family, and then we'll come back on Sunday. And then that way, me as a teacher, my daughter in school, we have that Easter Monday off, and so that way we are able to have that day off and then go back. So we actually have that day when we get back, which is always the best. Like, if you're going to take a vacation, and you have to have that vacation from the vacation. So you got to make sure you come back and have at least a day where you can just relax a little bit, be home, you know, put away the vacation stuff and just relax a little bit before you have to go back to work. So that's always our rule of thumb. Now we were going to go up on Saturday the week before, but then Friday we found that there was like a pretty good storm coming through southern Vermont, which did end up hitting the area where my in-laws live, which, again, the southern Vermont area. So they had like a pretty shitty, like rainy, icy day all Saturday. It rained a bunch and then snowed, and they got about a foot of snow on Saturday the week before Easter. So we ended up waiting until Sunday to drive up, which turned out to be a beautiful day. So, you know, the vacation started. It was great. We, you know, got off work and school on Friday. Saturday, we just had like a leisurely day. My daughter hung out with some friends. We hung out with our friends, Kate and Sean, and their family. We had dinner and we were able to like kind of pack slowly and just kind of took our time. So we like started the vacation. Great. Nice and easy going. We took that extra day and then got up Sunday morning, not super early, got up and drove up to Vermont. It's usually like a 6.5 or 7 hour drive. So it took us right about 6.5 hours. We ended up taking a little bit different route. We usually will go north from Baltimore. So we'll go like the 81, 83 corridor just directly north instead of taking 95 to avoid the traffic and also the tolls, because tolls are ridiculous going north of Baltimore. It's like $20 worth of tolls just to go from Baltimore to, you know, anywhere like above New York. So we usually will go kind of the back way through Pennsylvania and up that way. And so we did that. It was an easy trip. We decided to cut across and kind of do a different way instead of kind of the typical way we normally do. And we ended up taking the Taconic Parkway, which is beautiful. It's this great parkway. It's like no big trucks on it. So it's just cars. And it was the middle of the day on Sunday. And so it was a beautiful day and an easy driving. And we're driving along and I look up and I see in the trees like what looks like tinsel hanging from all the branches. And I'm like, oh, that's crazy. I look up and I point it out to my wife because, you know, we're driving along and we're hanging out and talking. And so we're looking at it and we're like, that's so weird. And the sun's hitting it. We realize that it's ice on the trees. So we're getting up to that point where it's switching over from no snow to snow. And they were kind of in that barrier between not being cold enough to snow and being cold enough. So they got the rain and they got the cold, but not quite the snow. So as we're driving along, it turns into like just a complete ice forest. Like all the trees are completely covered in ice and it's the middle of the day and it's bright sun, so everything's just like sparkling and glistening. It was crazy. It was a beautiful drive. So just to say, like, the vacation started really nice. We got up to Vermont, good evening, you know, early evening, had a good dinner. So we're up there and everything's great. So we're there for a couple of days. It ended up raining a little bit off and on. We went out and did some stuff, and my wife and daughter and I went out on Thursday. The day we went into a nearby town, Brattleboro, and went to historic, went to like a museum, and then we went to a historic movie theater called the Latches, and we went and saw Dune 2, Part 2, which was awesome. So yeah, if you haven't seen Dune Part 2 yet, and if you haven't seen Part 1, you got to go see Dune Part 1. It's just gorgeous. The cinematography is gorgeous. The story is very easy to follow. It really builds. The character development is really good. And so then we just saw Part 2, which again, I would 100% recommend it. 10 out of 10. I loved it. It was awesome. The pace was good. It moved through the kind of development of these different characters and how they, you know, how they adapt and how they develop in the different roles. So that was great. And, you know, we got some more backstory on the Harkonnen, which are the antagonists, and you get some more backstory on the Atreides and Paul and his story on Arrakis, on the Dune world, and you get more information about the people on that world, the Fremen, and so it's great. It really like builds the story. Little did we know, did I know, I didn't look beforehand. I think someone spoiled it after Dune 1 that it wasn't just one part. It was like there was going to be a part two. And so at the end of part two, like, it obviously alludes to a part three, which if I would have looked it up, I would have seen, like, it's already known that it's going to be a part three, but I wasn't 100% sure of that, which is fine. So Dune 2 was great. We really enjoyed it. Went out to dinner. And so by this time it had been, you know, we were up there from Sunday. It was Thursday. My wife's uncle and aunt were going to come over from the coast over to Vermont. And we were all going to have, you know, they're going to come over on Friday. And then we were going to have, you know, like, hang out, have dinner on Friday, and then Easter dinner on Saturday. And then, you know, we all head back on Sunday. So it's been a couple days, and, you know, I'm up there and it's beautiful. We had like some really nice weather. We took some really nice walks and did some stuff, but I'm starting to get antsy, right? I'm like, I'm getting a little stir crazy because it is snow, right? So it's not like you can just kind of go outside and hang outside, which is normally what I would do if I was, you know, like feeling just being in the house a lot. And, you know, like, again, like I said, we went out and we did some stuff, but where my in-laws live in Southern Vermont, everything is half an hour away or 20 minutes away. You know, it's like, not like you can just go down the road and go grab a bite somewhere, or go, you know, to the store or whatever. You really have to take some time to go out, which we do, and it was fine. But I was kind of getting to that point where I wanted to do something. I wanted to make something, right? My maker senses were starting to itch. And so I had this idea that I could maybe go out in the woods and find like a piece of green wood or something. And, you know, maybe something that was already down or something that was in a bunch of like growing tight with a bunch of stuff that I could cut down and use as some type of carving. So I'm thinking, okay, I'll do some like type of greenwood carving. And typically, like, I love walking sticks. So a lot of times I'll go out and I'll just find a cool walking stick and I'll carve some patterns and stuff into it, things like that. But for this one, I was thinking, okay, well, maybe I'll try to make a spoon, or I'll make something like that, a ladle or something, right? So I wanted to find a piece of green wood that had a split, you know, like the trunk comes up and then splits off to a branch. And so usually when you're thinking like a big spoon or a ladle, you want to use the branch part as the handle, and then the main stalk, usually cut that down, that'll be the bowl. So that was my goal. I was like, okay, well, go out in the woods. And I, of course, as a knife maker and a knife enthusiast, I brought, I think, three or four different knives, including my Leatherman Skeletal, which I always have on me, up with me. So I brought a carving knife that I made a couple years ago. It was a rhombic puco style blade and Osage and antler handle. Nice little carving knife. And so I brought that one along thinking maybe I'll do some carving while I'm up there. So walk out in the woods. And I actually asked my daughter, I was like, hey, Corinne, you want to go out, take a walk in the woods? She was like, yeah, definitely. So we went out and kind of spent some time in the woods. And I ended up finding like a tree, like a thin, you know, sapling that had kind of been pushed over. So I snapped that and made a walking stick, of course. And so I'm like walking around the woods, and we're out there for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, kind of the woods back behind my in-law's house. And we're looking for stuff, and I find a tree that's been pushed over, but, or, you know, fell over or something, or maybe got pushed over in the snow, a small sapling, in amongst a bunch of other little saplings and stuff. And this one had been pushed over. So I like kind of looked at it, and I could see that it was still relatively green. There was some dried out parts, but most of it was still green. So I was like, okay, well, I'll do that. So I, you know, I have just my carving knife with me. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll, you know, kind of trim off the branches. And, you know, when you're thinking about, okay, how do you cut off a bigger section of a branch just with a whittling knife or a small, you know, like a, just a small EDC or, a fixed blade camping knife, usually you want to kind of like the same way you would work a log when you're cutting it or bucking it with an axe. You kind of go in at angles, you know, you go in, kind of work your way in, you wedge it, and then you spin it around, you keep wedging it. So you work your way in from both directions into the middle, and then you can snap it off depending on if you want to snap it or if you want to cut all the way through, so you get a good clean break. So I did that. I kind of, you know, the bigger things, I was able to just kind of separate it from its base. And the bigger branches, I just, you know, carved off and took it back. Maybe like a 2.5 to 3 foot length. And then had, you know, like I said, like a big, a nice branch going off the side. And I had that chunk that I wanted. So I was like, okay, well, that'll work. That's a good shape for it. It wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but it would work well enough. So my daughter, I was like kind of taking some time to get that. So she had walked back to the house. So I walked back, and behind my in-law's house is just this like little hill, a berm behind their house that before you go up into the woodsy area, that was, from a bunch of like trees and just earth and things. They had some landscaping done in their backyard area. So that stuff was pushed up into kind of a berm, and that berm was like, it's up behind the house. And then behind that is kind of a marshy area. So it kind of keeps that marsh back as well. And then also they've got it covered with some, like some weed barrier stuff to keep the weeds from coming back up. Cause there was a lot of really nasty weeds and stuff that was in that earth that they had pushed back. So up on top of that, they have a couple cinder blocks there that kind of hold some stuff down. So I sat down on a cinder block, and I'm up on, this is a couple days after the snow. So it had melted a little bit. So it's kind of a dry area, but it's still in that, the weed barrier area. So I'm up on that, and I'm just sitting there. And so I'm like, this is great. You know, it's nice out. It had warmed up a little bit. It was still probably in the 40s, but the sun was out. So it was a nice day. I'm just sitting outside. I was like, this is what I needed, right? I needed something to do, because I was like, I just, you know, my, like, again, my maker, you know, mentality was kicking in. Like, I want to make something, I want to do something. So I'm outside, it's a beautiful day, I'm whittling, you know, I'm working on this spoon and working it down. And I start doing a reel, like starting putting together a little clip. So I just, you know, do a short 15 second or so, just video on my phone of the starting piece of wood I worked with. Worked on that for a while, got all the big branches and stuff off, and got it down to like a reasonable size to be able to whittle it. So then, you know, then I take my phone out and I do another video showing that. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll show the knife that I'm using as well. So I'm using the little Puco rhombic blade. And when I say rhombic, I mean, that's the profile of the blade. If you were looking at it from the tip on directly. So it's the shape of the blade. Usually when you have, so it's the, like the bevel grind, you know, when you talk about different bevel grinds, you talk about, like a Scandinavian grind, which is a really, short bevel, sharp angle down to a zero edge. If you have a saber grind, the grind goes up taller. If you have a full flat grind, that means the grind starts at the edge of the blade and goes all the way to the spine, right? You get a full flat. And then there's, you know, you have, we have a convex grind, you know, so it's more of like an apple shape or a bullet shape, and you have S grinds, you have lots of different grinds. So a rhombic grind is that you have a bevel that starts in maybe 2/3 from the blade, or the bevels from the two thirds of the edge up through the blade. And then that last third going up to the spine tapers back the opposite direction. So it's almost like a false edge, but not really. It's not meant to be a false edge, but it does taper back. So you get it tapered from the edge up to about 2/3, and then it tapers back to the spine, and then it's a flat spine, but it does taper in. So you get this rhombus shape, you know, so that's why they call it a rhombic puka. So I'm using that, And I show that in the video. I'm like, check it out. You know, this is what I'm using. And you can see that I'm starting to whittle down this big chunk that was some extra. I'm working my way to get it off. And like I was saying before, you know, do that by kind of bucking it, you know, but using it. So I cut in, I kind of work my way all the way around this bigger piece, which is probably 2.5 inches or so. Work my way all the way around with one direction, just kind of cutting in, flip it over and work back the other direction. So you get this like wedge cut out. So I'm doing that and I'm, you know, working my way around and, you know, at the same time, I'm kind of shortening and I'm doing different things on this piece of wood, getting it prepped and ready. And, you know, I'm thinking like, okay, I need to be really careful. I'm sitting outside. I'm using a really sharp knife and, you know, I don't have any gloves on because I don't wear gloves when I carve and stuff like that because you want to have good control over what you're holding. And I'm not, you know, I don't do a ton of green carving or spoon carving all the time. I know they have different things with Kevlar gloves, or you can wear something that has, you know, like a chainmail type thing, you know, on your hands to protect it. And a lot of people will do that. A lot of carvers do, and a lot of carvers don't. You know, it's just your own preference. So I didn't have anything like that. I'm just working away. And I'm also not at my own house with my own shop, because if I was, I would have just taken a handsaw or something and just cut off the pieces that I didn't need instead of just trying to whittle them off. I would have also maybe had a hatchet or an axe, right? I would have chopped some stuff down. I would have done a lot of this big initial shaping with a better tool suited for the job, but I didn't have that. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just be extra careful, you know, use what I have. And it was working fine. And I was like, that's actually a good opportunity to show that you can do that, right? This is how you can do this thing with a knife, with just like a regular, you know, fixed blade knife, a couple inch long knife. So I'm working my way around and, so I'm sitting on this. And so you imagine it's like 2 cinder blocks tall. So maybe, 18 inches or 20 inches, something like that. So kind of short, you know, short stool, but it's fine. I'm sitting down and, you know, I'm working in my lap and, kind of keeping my material that I'm working on in front of me, but kind of slightly off to my right. And I'm working, you know, my right hand, and I'm holding everything with my left hand and working it slowly. And I'm being really careful when I'm cutting back toward myself, so I don't end up, you know, the idea was I don't want to cut my fingers, you know, because obviously if I slip, I'm going to cut into my hand or I'm going to cut one of my other fingers. And I'm doing this like kind of aggressive work with a knife and not with what I would normally do, an axe or a hatchet or a saw. So I'm just working my way and so everything's going good. And I'm excited because it's like moving along pretty good. And I realize it's going to take some time, but that's okay. And so I'm cutting and I'm working my way around. I've got it probably 2/3 or 3/4 of the way through all the way, right? So I'm getting to the point where I probably could just grab it and snap it off and it would snap, but then it would leave a bunch of jagged, you know, torn wood, which I'd have to then whittle down further to get to some really clean wood. Because when you're working on in that end grain, it wants to split out. So if you already have it split out, you really got to dig down in to get to back to smooth wood. And I was trying not to do that. So like, I'm going to work my way all the way through this. So I'm at the point and I'm working around, pushing and just kind of working my way and, you know, trying to be extra safe. I'm like being careful with my hands. And it's at one point I'm kind of pushing and, you know, so I'm pushing pretty hard with my right hand to dig down in to kind of cut this wood out as I move. I'm using my left hand to hold, to stabilize the work, but also to push my thumb, you know, to add that extra strength behind it. And I'm pushing and my knife slips, not like it slips off to the right, right? So I'm holding my piece and I'm pushing around it and it's like cuts. So I cut in a piece, but then I cut past it, which I do often, you know, usually when you're cutting away from yourself, you're cutting out, which I was cutting away from myself, but it slipped past it in a way that I wasn't really expecting it to. And I cut down through my pants in the top of my thigh on my right leg, on the outside of my thigh. So above my knee by a couple inches, maybe 4 or 5 inches above my knee. And then down, so, you know, below my right pocket. And I cut my pants. And I look down at my pants, and I see that they're cut. And I see layers underneath of material that are cut. And I have this thought that goes through my head in just a few seconds, the split second, that says, oh, that's weird. I went through a couple layers. I hope I didn't cut my skin. Because I'm looking at my jeans, which I'm wearing just a pair of jeans. So that's one layer of fabric. But I'm in my head in that split second, I'm seeing multiple layers and thinking, oh, I hope that I didn't cut through all those layers and hit my skin. But what I was looking at was the layers of my thigh. So it was like skin and then just the kind of, you know, another layer right below it, and then down into some fatty tissue, and then kind of through that into some muscle. And so, yeah, I just kind of really quickly, because the knife, like as I was pushing it, like, you know, cut through wood and then went past the wood, and just straight across the top of my thigh, just shwink at an angle into my thigh and then out through my jeans really quick. And I look over and I'm like, you know, had that thought, oh, I didn't cut all the way through all of those layers into my thigh. And then I realize there are no layers. That's just the skin and the muscle in my thigh. And I like drop, because I had the walking stick there and I had the wood, and I grab my knife and I slide it back into the sheath, put it in my pocket, grab the wood that I'm working on, and I put my hand over my thigh. And at this point I'm like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Because I realize it's a pretty serious cut. And so I kind of like hobble back toward the house. I'm probably 50 or 60 feet away from the back door. So I kind of hobble. I'm holding my hand over my thigh, you know, trying to go quickly, but I'm also walking with my hand on my knee and like hobbling down, like going, oh shit, oh shit. Walk inside. And my daughter was upstairs in the bedroom that she is staying in, just hanging out, reading a book or something. And my wife was in the dining room working on some work that she had to do. And my mother-in-law, I think, was in the kitchen. They were in that area. Maybe she was in the dining room with her. And I'm like, I'm going to need some help. I cut my leg. And they're like, oh, what? What? Like, yeah, I think I'm probably going to need some stitches. So they come over and I like, you know, take my pants off. They take my boots off, take my pants off. And I look and I have a cut that's probably maybe 3.5 to 4 inches long. Starts probably right around the top of my thigh, and I cut in. So if you imagine, you know, I kind of my arm kind of swinging across with the blade in it, cuts in, it goes in shallow at the top part, but gets deeper and deeper because my leg is, you know, convex across. So as the blade was cutting straight across, it was cutting in deeper and deeper, and then shallower and shallower and out the other side. And you know, my wife was like, oh yes, you're definitely gonna need something. She's like, wow, that is huge, that thing is talking. So it looks pretty bad, or it looks, you know, it's big, but it didn't hurt at all. Like, I'm not trying to be tough, or I'm not trying to be stoic. Like, it just didn't hurt at all. Like, what I went through in my leg, there were like barely any nerve endings there, and I didn't hit any like serious artery or vein or anything, because it was barely bleeding. Like, and this is a pretty deep cut. I would say at the deepest part, it may have been 3/4 of an inch deep. It did go into the angle, so it wasn't like straight down into my leg, but that's, you know, it was a deep cut, and it was down through that initial like fat layer and then into that muscle and down into like some like a deeper area. So, but really it was crazy, because, you know, at that point my adrenaline's up a little bit, because I'm not exactly sure, right? It's that initial shock of, oh, okay, that happened. You know, it's not painful, but I know it's serious. It looks like it's definitely a long cut. It's going to take some stitches. I can tell that right off the bat. And, but yeah, I'm like, but she's just, you know, it's not really bleeding. Like, it's like a little drip of blood, but it wasn't like gushing or anything. And it really didn't hurt at all. Like, I had that initial adrenaline rush, but no pain at all. It's crazy. So we grab a couple of things. My mother-in-law brings down the kit, you know, the first aid kit, and got a couple butterfly bandages. So we put those over. We put three, you know, I'm kind of hold it together. And my wife puts the butterfly bandages over it to hold it shut, to hold it, you know, closed as much as possible. And then we put a gauze pad over it and some tape and stuff to get it ready. So like, okay, this is Friday, and my uncle, my wife's aunt and uncle are on their way over. They're a couple of hours away, but they're on their way. And like, all right, well, we're going to ride into town somewhere and go to a patient first. Now, my in-laws live about maybe 10 minutes or so away from a small town called Wilmington. And in Wilmington, there's a health center, but it's more of a doctor's office. So we're like, well, my mother-in-law said, well, you could stop there. Like, just, you know, you could call or check, because they may do it. You know, they may do stitches there, but they may not. Otherwise, your best bet's to go to Reedsboro, which is where we had gone the day before to go into town and do some shopping and have dinner and go see Dune 2. I'm like, all right, we're going back to Reedsboro. And that's about 35 minutes away. So we get all set up, hop in the car, and my wife drives. And we head in, and on the way to Reedsboro, when you're going in, we got to pass through Wilmington anyway. So we drive past the doctor's office. I'm like, we might as well stop. Like, we hadn't called ahead, but it was like, let's just stop and ask. Because, you know, it seems silly to drive 40 minutes when we could drive 12 minutes. So we do. We're like, stop. We walk inside, and I can kind of feel the bandage just sliding down a little bit, and I can feel that it's bleeding a little bit. And so we go inside, and we had to wait. There's like the woman's helping somebody and someone else is behind us. And we wait maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And I just asked, I was like, do you guys do stitches here? And she's like, no, I'm so sorry. We don't, you know? And of course, I'm sure it'd be different, right? I'm sure if I came in and I was bleeding all over the place and I was in a dire situation, they would have taken care of me however they needed to. But, you know, I'm pretty calm. Like I look fine. You know, I changed my pants. So it's not like I'm wearing cut up bloody pants, which they didn't really even like get much blood on them because I wasn't bleeding all that much. But yeah, so they're like, no. So, okay. So we go back out, we get in the car, we drive to Reedsboro, about another 25 minutes away or so, and go to the patient first there. And they're pretty quick. You know, they get us in and the nurse comes in. She's like, oh yeah, that's a pretty good cut. And she kind of cleans it up and just, you know, just kind of sprays some stuff, the cleaner stuff in there, and just wipes it and dabs. It doesn't have to do too much stuff. And, so then the doctor comes in and through the whole process, I did end up having to get 11 stitches. She kind of looks at it and she's like, okay, well, I'm going to have to give you some lidocaine, right? So that's obviously I'm going to have to stick the needle into the wound to numb it. She's like, I want to make sure that it's numb through the stitching process because I'm not sure how many stitches I'll have to do and they may be kind of deep. So I'm like, all right, that's fine. So that obviously, or not obviously, but that was the most painful part of the whole thing, even up till now, even the healing process. And now we're 6 or 7 days out. Actually, it happened exactly a week ago because today is Thursday. And so, you know, she's starting and she's cleaning me up a little bit. And then she sticks the needle in a few places to make sure it's nice and numb. And the first couple ones, like, you know, anytime you're getting.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you get stitches, anything that's like a local antiseptic, right? You know, a local numbing agent, they have to put the needle in to your wound and around your wound to make sure they're numbing the wound so they can take care of it. So the first couple, two, three sticks, you know, they stung pretty good. It wasn't like, you know, again, that's in a really, the area on my leg was not super sensitive. Like I told the nurse, the doctor a few times, I was like, yeah, it was really weird because it didn't hurt at all. You know, the when it started hurting at all was when I was about halfway to the doctor's office. And that was like, in a scale of 1 to 10 of pain, it was like a 1 and it felt like an abrasion on the surface of my skin. And so it wasn't even anything deep inside. It was just like, if you scratch your skin with, you know, like a sanding belt or with a rasp or something, you know, you feel that scratch on the outside, or, you know, you brush against a sharp piece, corner of wood or something. So that's kind of what it felt like on the outside, a little bit burny, you know, a little stingy, but not really much. So then, you know, like they use the needle, they stick it in, and that's obviously a little more painful, but not too bad. But yeah, so I ended up getting 11 stitches. She did 8, and she was like, okay, I think I'm going to have to do a couple more. And this, by this point, everything was all numbed and I couldn't feel it anyway. So she did a few more, and I joked that my daughter Corinne, she fell at one point and had to get 14 stitches in her palm, in the meaty part right below your thumb, cause she fell and got a pretty good cut there. It was like a big V, and she's very proud that she got 14 stitches. So I joked with the doctor. I was like, yeah, maybe you can, you know, can you give me just 3 more stitches so I can have the same as my daughter? And yeah, but she laughs about that. And so did my daughter. She's like, no, you didn't. You better not get as many stitches as me. But it was fun. So yeah, so we get done and it's fine. And yeah, but just, you know, going back to the beginning of the podcast, thinking about that safety quote, really, like, my mind was very much around safety, you know, thinking like, I want to make sure that I'm safe because I'm sitting outside and I'm working with a tool that I typically wouldn't work with to do this work that I'm doing. And so I want to show that you can do it with this. If this is all you have, you can carve stuff like that, and you perfectly can. And I will finish that video, and a clip of my my injury will be in there as well. So I had to take a couple of days off, but I will finish that that carving. I did bring it home with me. But yeah, again, you know, carefulness costs you nothing. Carelessness may cost you your life. And I wasn't being careless. You know, I was being careful. Like, you know, there were some things obviously I could have done. I could have had something in my lap, you know, like a lap. I could have had a leather apron on or something. There are some things I could have done and some things I may have done differently. If I was home, of course I would have done them differently, but I was being careful. Like, I was being extra careful with my hands because I knew I didn't want to do something, you know. So everything I was doing was like consciously thinking about that safety. And then in that situation, it's just, you know, something else, fluke can happen. So, you know, being careful costs you nothing. Being careless can cost you your life. It can cost you a lot more. But being careful, being extra careful with safety, making sure that you're doing things correctly, take a little bit more time, really be mindful of what you're doing when you're working in your shops, because you never know. You could always, you know, something could happen. And if I wasn't sitting the way I was to make sure I wouldn't cut, you know, toward myself or really toward my legs, which, you know, I did end up cutting, but it was further out. Like, if I was sitting it differently, I could have cut into my, you know, my artery inside of my thigh, or kind of cut into my kneecap, or, you know, I could have cut my fingers. There's a lot of things you could have done. But I actually was really, when I was talking to the doctor, she was saying how she had this, her son, she's a couple kids, but her son's very, he's a daredevil, right? He does downhill skiing and, you know, really fast stuff. He does all sorts of sports and things, and he always hurts himself. And she says, like, she as a doctor, she doesn't discourage him from doing those things that he loves, because he loves to do them right there. That's what makes him excited. That's what makes him excited about life and happy. And so, you know, if that's what you love, things are going to happen. You know, you just have to understand those safety possibilities and just do what you can do to alleviate that unnecessary risk, right? So yeah, if I wasn't outside carving a spoon, I wouldn't have cut my leg, you know, but who knows, right? That's what I love to do. I love making things. I love, you know, shaping things. And you know, any craftsman, any woodworker, any, you know, anyone will tell you that a sharp tool is a joy to work with, because you know, you're doing what you need. You're using the least amount of force to do what you're doing. And so I always keep my knife sharp, and that one was very sharp. Maybe rightfully so, you know, it probably cut through really cleanly because of how sharp it was, but there was definitely no resistance. It was like right through my pants and so fast through that, like, you know, it's just looked down and I'm seeing these like layers of white. And I guess in my mind, maybe it was like layers of, you know, some type of insulation in whatever pants that my mind was thinking I was wearing. But you know, it's just these, like, you know, no blood or anything yet, because it was just like so fast. And like, oh yeah, that's my leg. But yeah, so I did have a little leg injury. Devin's not with us tonight because he's having some health issues and had to spend a couple of days in the hospital, but he will be back next week. He and I are still cranking away on the Viking YouTube Knife Maker Challenge. And so we have that we're working on. We would have been working a little bit more. We've got about 2 more weeks or so before we have to turn the video. So, starting next week, he'll get back out. We had to take a couple days off, but he's ready to get back shooting. So he'll be back over. But in the meantime, I have been working on that, working a little bit on the handle, some things I can do behind the scenes and do a little bit of time lapse. So not really behind the scenes, but so I was working on the time lapse for that, shaping the handle and doing some stuff. I really like how I have it right now. It's kind of an octagonal shaped handle, and it'll probably end up being a little bit more rounded, but you know, I had to stop at a certain point because to be able to hang the head, you want to be able to have the handle in a way that you can clamp it into the vise. And so if you finish your handle completely and then you try to hang the head, it's always a little bit more awkward. And you can do it, but I figured I'd wait. You know, from where it is now to the finished state won't be a ton. So I've got the handle pretty much ready to go. I have the head all ready to go, and the head has been modified and shaped to be more of a Viking bearded axe. And I came up with some cool designs that I've laser etched into the head. And that took a long time. I was working with my Laser Pecker 3 and trying to etch the head. Because it only etches so big. It's kind of like a 2.5 by 3.5 inch square. So I had to break the etch down into a couple parts. And just with the high power, I'm doing like a 4K etch with 100% power and, you know, 50% depth, and just trying to like do a really deep etch. you know, nice and dark. That doing one of those in that full size takes about 2 hours or so because the laser's moving really slow to cut really deep. And I haven't had a ton of time and experience with the laser enough to really know what's the most ideal thing. I'd still need to do some more experiments, but this seems to work pretty well. So, but it took multiple days to get the etches as deep as I want them, kind of set it up and then etch it once and look at it and, you know, see, okay, well, I'll just start the etch again. So I had etched each piece of it there. So like two different pieces on both sides, etched three or four times, you know, laser art 3 or 4 times, and each one is a couple hours. So it took some time, but it looks pretty good. Pretty happy. There's a few spots that aren't exactly perfect. Not the like design. The design's perfect because it's laser etched, but they're like not as deep as I'd want them, but it looks pretty good. So I'm pretty happy with that. I will be doing a little bit more modification to the head. So there's like a space between the main design around the eye and the cheeks of the axe head and then the blade. There's kind of a space between the two. So I want to do, I want to file in some lines in between that so it actually like cut into the axe head and maybe something else across the cheeks as well. So I did a little bit of modification there, and then I'll hang the head on the axe and then do some leather wrap stuff. I want to kind of do some crisscross leather wrap down the axe handle and then do like a leather handle at the bottom, something like that. So, but I'm excited. And if you have been following along at all and, you know, the different YouTube knife makers from the challenges, we all obviously have Instagram and YouTube. So a lot of people have been posting stuff, a little sneak peek. So it's going to be fun. There's some really cool work going out there. And, you know, it's always fun to go into these lighthearted competitions with all these guys just to see what they do, you know, see what the different people do and their different takes on, you know, a very broad idea. And ours is just Viking, right? That's all it was. It was like, you do whatever you want within the guise of this is a Viking build. So it's been fun and we'll get back to that next week. And then when we have Devin on next week, we'll talk about that a little bit more when he's back. So we're obviously not going to be podcasting for too super long this week. We're at just over half an hour now. I did want to talk a little bit about the craziness that happened here in Baltimore, which we've been on international and national, international news, is the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, which is just insane. This happened last Tuesday. This is while I was up in Vermont. And so I woke up, maybe it was Tuesday morning or whatever it was, I can't remember exactly, but woke up and I had a couple of texts on my phone. I had one from my brother Derek and one from my brother Drew. And we have like a group brothers chat. It's the four of us that we just kind of, you know, text chain. And my oldest brother Derek had said, like, you know, did you see that a ship hit the Key Bridge and it collapsed? And then my brother Drew responded to it, which is probably what woke me up because it was about around 7 o'clock or so. And he responded with something like, that's crazy, or just saw it on the news. And so I pull up my phone and, you know, search Key Bridge, you know, collapse, whatever. And all the videos that everyone has seen now are there. And it's just crazy. It's like the Key Bridge is, for people who aren't familiar with Baltimore, that's kind of like, it's like our big bridge. You know, it's the Bay Bridge is Chesapeake Bay Bridge, and that's a huge bridge. But the Key Bridge is like, it's like our Golden Gate Bridge, or, you know, it's like, it's that kind of bridge that's there. That's this big iconic part of the skyline of Baltimore. You know, pretty much anywhere, if you're high enough in any building that's in Baltimore City, you can see the downtown, but you can see out to the Key Bridge because it's, you know, it's kind of the mouth of our harbor, the inner harbor. And it's part of our beltway, our Baltimore beltway. So the highway that goes around Baltimore, 695, that the Key Bridge is part of that. You know, that's not just like something else. It's part of that beltway. So it's a huge part of just transportation and our economy, because inside the harbor, you know, we're a water town. Baltimore is a water town. Everyone knows somebody who works on the water or near the water or in a port or, you know, has some type of fishing job or crabbing or, you know, like that's just part of who we are. And so to have this iconic piece of our skyline just not be there anymore, is it's detrimental. It's crazy. It's such a weird psychological hit that you wouldn't expect from something like a big inanimate object. But when you're so used to seeing this thing and it's in tons of people's pictures, and for me as a sailor, you know, I spend hundreds of hours on the water every year, and I would say 99% of that time on the water, I can see the key bridge, right? So I'm like out near it. When I race on Wednesday nights, which is my own boat, we sail and we race out there, and you know, our marks that we race around, cause we, you know, in this type of sailing, you know, we use existing channel markers, and that's the channel markers that we use are the ones that are going right to the key bridge, right? So we're using these channel markers, they're counting down until they get to the key bridge. So we're using ones that go right up to it. So we're sailing in and around and close to the key bridge every Wednesday night. And then when I sail on Tuesday nights, I sail with a friend of mine and he sails inside of the key bridge. So that whole area between Fort McHenry and the key bridge, which is a big open harbor, we're sailing there. So that entire time that I'm on the water, the key bridge is within sight. And from where I work downtown the city, you know, from the roof of our building, we can see the key bridge. So it's a crazy, crazy thing. I haven't been out on the water yet. We're just actually tomorrow or today, if you're listening to this on Friday, we're going to be working on sanding the bottom of our boat and getting it ready to paint and get it ready to get back in the water, because the end of this month, April, I think 24th or so, is our first race. So we're getting it ready. So I haven't been back out on the water yet to see it in person, but it's going to be weird. It's going to be really, really strange to get out there and be in that landscape without that piece of the skyline. I don't know how it's going to affect me yet, but I did post a thing on Instagram. We were coming up with some hats, some logo designs for some hats for our sailing crew gun. And one of the designs was a cannon, like an old school cannon with the word gun on the barrel. And then I had the key bridge in the background with a sailboat, you know, kind of like a simplified version of our boat kind of sailing along underneath the key bridge. So it's just like, it's a huge part of that area that I sail in, that I've been sailing in for 25 years, you know, since I was in high school. It's a strange, strange thing. And, you know, seeing the video of the boat coming along the tanker, you know, the shipping container hauler, and just kind of cruising down and losing power, and then power coming back on and losing power again. And then you just see you can kind of see the water churn right at the bow of it. And then it hits and the whole thing falls, and it's crazy. I mean, thinking now, of course, right, you have this one giant center span, and then it's just one main arch of bridge support. And of course that's all going to fall so fast like that, but it's just not something you think of. And, you know, the first thing I read was, you know, governor or whatever, like no signs of terrorism. And, you know, it wasn't really on my mind, but then the more you think about it, it's like, well, yeah, of course, like if you're going to attack a country, you know, you try to attack them in their infrastructure, you know, in the modern day and age, I guess, right? So of course there's lots of theories about that, like, yeah, this is a targeted thing that's happened. I don't believe that. I don't 100% disbelieve it, you know. I don't count it out 100%, but you know, I'm obviously an optimist, so you know, my gut tells me that it was just an accident, you know. But you know, it's like, why would it be something other? You know, you have this, yeah, it's a big part of our industry, right? Shipping up and down the East Coast. Any trucks that are driving have to go over the key bridge, because the other way you would go is the other way around 695, which they can do. It's a longer way. Or the other way to get through Baltimore is to go 95 south, which takes a tunnel under our harbor, or you take 895, which is a bypass, and that also goes a tunnel underneath the harbor. So you have these two tunnels that go under, or you can go around the beltway. And trucks with any type of hazardous material cannot go through the tunnels, so they have to go around over the key bridge. So all those trucks are now diverting to the opposite way. So imagine that adds in probably an extra half an hour, 45 minutes or so to that drive. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. And that's the reason why I also am like, I'm not sure. Does that make sense? That would be something that, you know, would be a targeted attack on Baltimore, right? Yeah. Now, the shipping industry in Baltimore is huge, and that bridge was the center span of that bridge is the channel that goes into the Inner Harbor, which is where all of the, you know, what were like the number 8th port for import export for cars and, you know, just all the jobs. So the detriment to me is more just like there's a lot of people who are going to be their jobs. There's like a tenuous situation around whether or not they'll have their jobs or not, or how long they're going to be off. You know, who can afford to pay people when they're not working, and who can afford to not be paid for however many weeks it's going to take or months for them to open up that channel back. And people who commute on that side of the city are either going to have to find different ways around. And so it's already starting to affect the snowball effect is starting to like grow based off of, you know, what things are being stopped because of that main, vein in our system, that main thorough that direction. So pretty crazy. Some of the guys, you know, where I sail is right outside of the Key Bridge. So, you know, I take the Baltimore Beltway around and I get off on the north side of the harbor and get off and go, and I sail out of our marina there. And there are guys that sail that come from the south side who have to come across the Key Bridge or come through the tunnels and stuff. So it's definitely going to add a significant amount of time into their commute if they're going to come over and sail with us this season, because it's going to be a couple years till they get that bridge back up and running. And who knows, you know, it's kind of exciting to see what they'll do, what new type of bridge will go there, and, you know, in honor of the old bridge and in honor of the people who unfortunately lost their lives, because there were a handful of workers that were on the bridge. Unfortunately, you know, just, you can't imagine the percentage of more lives that would have been in danger if this would have happened, you know, at a time that was not in the middle of the night, like it did happen. It was 1:30 or so. So the fact that it happened in the middle of the night, and the fact that they were able to make a distress call, made a call to the bridge and let them know to stop traffic. So they were able to stop traffic. So there was no traffic on the bridge when they hit. And, you know, fortunately there were a couple trucks, people who are working on the bridge, you know, people that were out, and they just did not have enough time to get through to them and let them know. They didn't have enough time to get off. So there was some loss of life, unfortunately, but you know, thank goodness it happened when it did, because it would have just been way worse. So, you know, well, it'll definitely be, you know, a new bridge, and it'll obviously have its dedications to those people who did lose their lives. And hopefully, you know, we'll see something, you know, kind of crazy and beautiful come out of this loss and tragedy of the bridge collapse. It's just a crazy thing. And, you know, I'm sure I'll talk about it some more on the podcast after I get out there on the water and see it, but, I'm ready to get back out, man. It's been a long winter and I'm ready to get sailing again, be back out on the water and, just experience that water life that we all know and love, in and around Maryland and in Baltimore. So happy to be that time of year, happy to be back out working underneath the boat while it's out on the, in the marina, on the hard, as we like to say. And, you know, get that bottom nice and shiny and painted so we can get out there and be nice and fast this season and race and compete, which we love to do. So, yeah, so I think that's all I have for us today, you know, without Devin here. Got a couple of things to talk about, but told you my nice long leg story, and I'm sure we'll hear some more from Devin next week about the reason why he's been out. And, yeah, but it's been, you know, a nice vacation these 2 weeks. We're, you know, a nice little break from the podcast, but we're ready to get back in. I was definitely itching to get back and talk tonight. And when Devin told me he was going to take another week off, I was like, all right. I kind of hesitated. I was like, nah, I'm just going to do it. You know, I enjoy the podcast. I enjoy reaching out there. I know that there, you know, there's a bunch of you out there that listen, and I really appreciate it. And so, you know, can't thank you guys enough. We really do appreciate all the listens and all the support that you give us. So, you know, when we got to take a couple weeks off, I don't want to have to take off more than we need to, but occasionally it's nice to have a couple weeks off. On that note, I am going to make my recommendation for the week. So my recommendation is the show 3 Body Problem. I'm sure you've heard about it. It's just out now on Netflix. It's been getting a lot of fun rave reviews. I was actually a little surprised. I saw Rotten Tomatoes gave it like a 7 point something, you know, it was like less than an 8 in Rotten Tomatoes. Cause I think so far I've watched the first 2 episodes and it's so much fun. Just the amount of like thought, how thought provoking it is just exciting. You know, it's giving you just enough information to be like, okay, what does this mean? What could this be? You know, and it's opening up all these possibilities of what's happening to this, you know, the Earth. And if you're not familiar, the kind of synopsis, the general synopsis they give without giving a spoiler away is that there was these some experiments that were happening in the 60s that now, you know, whatever, 60 years later, are the effects of those experiments are now putting our world in jeopardy. So we're starting to get into like, what does that mean? What are the things that are starting to happen? And you got these different things that make you think, okay, is it like a sci-fi alien show? Is it a, you know, virtual reality Matrix type show? There's all these different things. Is it a, you know, someone's in a coma and this is in their dream? You know, it just, the way that it kind of starts to like build the plot, it does a really fun way of leading you on. It kind of reminds me a little bit about the way like Lost did back in the day, where like things are happening and you're not exactly sure and you can't really explain and you don't know what is this and how could this happen. And when they introduce new things, then all of a sudden it throws you for a loop. So it's been really fun. My wife and I just started watching it last night. We watched 2 episodes and I'm going to watch a couple, maybe an episode or two more this evening after I finish recording. But yeah, it's been really fun so far and I definitely want to recommend it. So that's the Three Body Problem on Netflix. So far it's been really good. A lot of really good acting. It is mature, so it's got some nudity and some gore and some, you know, language and also all the things that make it interesting for us adults, but you want to be careful about those kids watching that. So be careful, but check it out. Three Body Problem on Netflix. It's awesome. All right, guys. Well, I think that'll do it for me this evening. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you don't forget to head over to YouTube and check us out there. Subscribe, like, let us know what you think, comment. We got some good videos over there. Lots of years now under our belt making stuff and just trying to really keep doing things and keep putting out videos because we love doing it. And, you know, I love putting the stuff out there and I love the feedback we get and the inspiration I get from people and the inspiration I've given people over the years. It's just, it's humbling and, you know, it's fun to see. So we really appreciate you guys watching and following along and listening to the podcast. And you can also head over to Instagram and follow us both there. You will find, I will post a video or a reel or something there on carving the spoon because I'm going to finish the spoon. And then when I'm finished, I'll post that video and there will be a clip of that cut on my leg, nice and stitched up now. I got a couple more days for the stitches. My wife is oddly enough excited to help pull the stitches out once it's all healed up in the next day or two. But yeah, I'll get some pictures of that on there as well. So if you're listening to the podcast, then you'll have a little pre-sneak peek of why there will be a quick clip of a big gash in my leg in between that process of whittling a spoon from a piece of green wood. But you can check that out on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship. And you can follow Devin as well for all the behind-the-scenes stuff that he likes to put up, which is little Easter eggs and his kind of small following, which he loves. The people that, you know, just listen to this podcast really follow Devin and, you know, through people in the community. But his Instagram is at The Art of Camera Guy, so you can check him out as well. And last but not least, if you guys want to support us further, if you feel like you want to support the podcast and the channel and what we do and, you know, things we make and the lessons that we try to teach and the inspiration that we give, you can head over to patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship and you can support us there. We really appreciate it for all of those people who are supporting us now and who have supported us over the years. It's a crazy, crazy humbling thing to put stuff out there that you love to do and have people just want to help you out and support. So we really appreciate that. And yeah, that's it for now. All right, guys. Thank you all so much for listening. This is episode 168 of the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. Thanks so much, guys, and we will talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.